he's very effectively blocked out. Back here in the back of my store, I've got a storeroom, and it's filled with guilt and remorse associated with the people I've hurt in the past. We're not drunken bums. We got a conscience. The guilt and remorse just literally eats us up. So if I want God to direct my thinking, I'm going to have to do something about the removal of these things before God's thinking can enter. He gave us self-will. And he said, I love you enough that I'll let you live on self-will till you destroy yourself. And he said, if you ever want to come back in the garden, and if you ever want me to take care of you again, then you have to give back to me what I gave to you, which is self-will. He said, I'll never take it away from you. And we cannot give it back until we clean it up. And it's just that simple. Now, my book is getting ready to show me how to get rid of these resentments, how to get rid of these fears, how to get rid of this guilt and remorse. It's going to show me a way to look at them honestly and see the truth behind them. And the greatest thing it's going to show me is how to keep them from coming back in the future. And when they're gone, then God's thinking can enter. But until they're gone, God is blocked out and will stay restless and irritable and discontented, filled with shame, fear, guilt, and remorse, madder in hell and scared to death. And under those conditions, sooner or later, we go back to drinking. And this is such a simple little process that it just literally blows our mind every time we look at it. For years, we complicated the hell out of it. And there's really nothing here to complicate us. Listen to what he says. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. In other words, we're going to do the same thing he told us to do in the business inventory in our lives. We took stock honestly, truthfully, morally. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways is what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we've been not only mentally and physically ill, we've been spiritually sick. When a spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. Now, before we set them on paper, let's look at the word resentments just a minute. Make sure we all understand it the way the writer understood it. The word resentment comes from two old words. First is R-E. Anytime you see R-E in front of another word, it means to redo or to do again. Replay, repaint, redo, so on and so forth. The last part of this word, sentiment, comes from an old word called sentire, which means to feel. So the word resentment means to re-feel or to feel over again. Okay, we're going through life. And as we go through life, somebody who is sick in self does something to us to threaten one of our basic instincts of life. Maybe they put me down in the eyes of others and threaten my self-esteem. Maybe they rip off my money. Maybe they threaten my sex life. Now, when they do that, that's not a resentment. That is a wrong on their part for doing so. It doesn't become a resentment until I go off in the next room, or I go clear across town and sit down in my easy chair that evening, and I replay that thing in my mind. Now, when they did it to me, it hurt. And they hurt me by doing so. But when I sat down in my easy chair and replay that thing in my mind, I hurt myself the second time. And the stupidity in it now is they're not even in the room. They're on the other side of town. And I replay it and feel the pain the second time. And then I replay it again and feel the pain the third time. And I find out that I'm not always honest with myself when I do this. Because every time I play that thing over, I make what they did just a little bit worse. And I make what I did just a little bit less. And I make the pain just a little bit deeper. And let me play it over enough times, I can say to myself, well, hell, I was just standing there doing nothing. And they come along and did it to me, and it's all their fault. Kind of like football. I went up there at lunchtime and turned on the TV and was watching Ohio State and Michigan play. And one of those Ohio State receivers caught a pass that the quarterback threw to him way up in the air. He had to jump up to get it. They do that on purpose, you know, to keep the other guys from catching it. But the opposing team, they've learned the time to hit that receiver is just when that ball reaches his hands. And if they can hit him up in the air and knock him loose from that ball, then it's an incomplete pass. And they hit this old boy. He was about 3 feet off the ground. And they just turned him upside down. And he come down on his head. And one arm went this way and a leg went that way. And he was really, really hurt. And you could tell that he was hurt, laying there on the ground. Now, the receiver, or the guy up in the booth, the announcer, he's got a resentment machine up there. Because after a while, he said, let's look at that again. And we looked at it again, and man, it was in slow motion and living color. Looked twice as bad as it did before. You could really see the expression of pain on his face. Now, the ball game is going on. This guy was hurt, but that didn't stop the game. They run out there, and if he hadn't hurt too bad, they'll pump a little air in him and get him up, start the game. Or if he's hurt too bad, they'll drag him off to the side and put somebody in his place. This guy, they drug him off and put somebody in his place, and the ball game is going on, just like the game of life goes on. But the announcer, after a while, he said, let's look at that again. 10 minutes later, this announcer sitting over here bouncing this guy up and down, up and down, up and down. Off, and that's just what a resentment does. You know, we alcoholics have got in our minds up here a little resentment replay machine. I guess Al-Anons do too, but I know we alcoholics do. And we got up in the morning and we clean the lens on it. We don't want to miss anything. We shined it on the world all day long with a clean set of lens so we can record everything that they do to us that day that is bad. We don't want to record none of that good junk. We record nothing but bad stuff. Go home in the evening, sit down in our easy chair, play it over our head, make ourselves sick, and blame others for doing so. There's some days, though, that we have a bad day. There's days they won't do anything bad to us.
That's a bad day for an alcoholic.
That's a bad day for an alcoholic. Because we're shining around the world and we're waiting to record and they don't do anything that we can record. And that's a bad day for one of us. You know what we record those days? By God, we record what they're thinking. That's what we do. Is there any way that God could enter a mind filled with that kind of crap? Absolutely not. A bad thing about a resentment, if you throw it out there long enough, after a while it's going to turn around and come right back at you. And when it comes back at you, it comes back as self-resentment. And we begin to resent ourselves for being in a position for them to do those things to us. And we can't stand self-resentment. And after a while, self-resentment turns into self-pity. And that's the sickest feeling that a human being can have. And we alcoholics love self-pity. My God, we love to get up in the morning and put it on as a cloak of dignity. And we go out the door and we say, "Here I come, mean old world. I know you're just waiting out there to get me all day long." If you don't think we love self-pity, you try to feel sorry for an alcoholic. He'll tell you in a hurry, "Don't you feel sorry for me. That's my damn job. Don't you mess with that." So if I want God to direct that part of my thinking, apparently I'm going to have to do something about these resentments and get them out of my head, because whoever or whatever I'm resenting, they are controlling my thinking. When I'm resenting them, they're controlling the way I think. And if they're controlling the way I think, then God can't, and it's just that simple. Let's look at them for just a few minutes.
There's only one thing wrong with this illustration on page 65. It's already filled out. And we're not quite sure how Bill filled it out. So if you were like me, you'd look down with this and have a blank sheet and resentful at the cause and what part of self was affected. And we'd look at that first column and put down the name Mr. Brown, and then we'd change our mind and go to the cause and write down why we're upset with Mr. Brown, and then what part of self was affected. Well, I don't know, so I just skip over that. Change my mind and come back to the second column, and Mrs. Jones, and why I'm upset with Mrs. Jones, and what part of self was affected. I don't know, so I leave that blank. After a while, if you're like me, your mind goes tilt. And I say to myself, "Oh, heck," or words to that effect. "They don't want this in here. What they want is all my life story." So I just fold that up and move on over to write my all my life story. But we think, after study and long time study, that these columns will be filled out one column at a time from top to bottom, while our minds are on one thing and one thing only. Who we resent at top to bottom, leaving that little space. When we get through with that, we go to the second column. What are we upset about? The cause. You notice that they're only using four or five little words to describe the cause. No long dissertation about that. And then the third column, what part of self was affected? Well, we've gone to the 12 and 12. We've got a working knowledge of these words. Now we know what part of self was affected. We can fill it out in the third column. One column at a time, from top to bottom. That's the secret.
So to avoid any confusion, we made up a little inventory sheet called a review of resentments. And we want to stress this is not anything new. We're not trying to bring another inventory into AA. Now, this is nothing in the world but page 65 in the blank form. The last two columns, just disregard them for the time being. We're going to use them in a couple pages later. We'll look at the first three columns. Column one, I'm resentful at. Column two is the cause. Column three affects my. Page 65 in the blank form. Now let's see if we can't see the directions on how to fill these things out.
It says, in dealing with resentment, we set them on paper. Well, we've got our paper now. We're ready to go.
Now here comes the first instruction.
We listed people, institution, or principles whom we're angry, period. We stop right there, going from top to bottom, one name, one institution at a time, leaving that little space in between it. We write them down.
Well, we got one thing and one thing only on our mind. Let's go from top to bottom, making a list of those resentments, leaving a little space between each name, as the example does here on page 65. I've never known an alcoholic yet that did not know just exactly who and what, by God, we're mad at. We spend thousands of hours sitting around in bars talking about it. All we have to do is take it out of her head, put them down on a sheet of paper. They came to me and they said, "Make a list of your resentments." And I said, "I don't have any." And they said, oh, surely you do. Maybe you don't understand what a resentment is. And they explained it to me. And I said, oh, yeah, I got a couple of those. They said, get them down on paper. And I took a sheet of paper and I listed about 8 names on that sheet of paper. And I got another sheet of paper and listed about 8 names. Another sheet and listed about 8 names. Another sheet and listed about 8 names. I got somewhere up around 162. And I said, man, you're madder than hell at everything. I did not know that. You can only see one resentment at a time in your head. And I don't think any of us will realize how many resentments we really do have. How much they control and dominate our thinking. Until we get them all down on a sheet on sheets of paper and see them in their entirety. Now, we've made a decision to let God direct our thinking. If we've got that many resentments, then God can't. And it's just that simple. So I learned something very valuable just by filling out column 1. Bill's example. In first column, he put Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, my employer, and my wife. He probably had more resentments, I just assume. He didn't want to use any more space in the big book. But that is an example of how we fill out column 1. Now let's look at the second instruction.
We ask ourselves why we were angry. Period. We stop right there. We go beside each name now. It's in the second column. Simplicity is the key. 4 or 5 little words to describe the cause as to why we're angry. And we all know why we're angry. For instance, he's mad at Mr. Brown. Why? His attention to my wife. Told my wife of my mistress. Brown may get my job at the office. Now, I don't even know Mr. Brown. I'm getting upset with him myself. He's mad at Miss Jones. Why? Well, she's a nut.
Come on up here about
she snubbed me. She committed her husband for drinking. He's my friend, and she's a gossip. Put my best drinking buddy in a nut house is what she did, and then telling everybody about it. He's upset with his wife, with his employer. Why? He's unreasonable and unjust and overbearing. Probably wanted to know, by the way, where were you all day yesterday? Anyway. He threatens to fire me for my drinking and padding my expense account. Very narrow-minded individual, isn't he? Now, he's really upset with his wife. Why? Well, she misunderstands and nags, and she likes old Brown, and she wants the house put in her name. You tie all that together, wanting her house put in her name and liking old Mr. Brown. It's time to get upset pretty quickly. But simplicity is the key in the second column. 4 or 5 words to describe the cause.
If we know who we're mad at in column 1... Did we know why we're mad at them for column 2? And we just use a few little words to put down the cause of the resentment. As I finished up column 2, I learned something else that's become very valuable to me. I began to realize it's really not them I'm mad at. It's what they've done to me that's got me mad. I could take Mr. Brown out of here and put Mr. Green in. I'd be just as mad at Green as I am Brown if Green did the same thing. Take Mrs. Jones out and put Mrs. Smith in. I begin to realize it's not the people that's got me upset. It's what they've done to me that's got me upset. And the reason that's valuable is I'm getting ready to start out on a lifetime-changing process. And I'm going to try to develop the best possible relationship that I can with the world and everybody in it so I can have maximum peace of mind and serenity. Part of that relationship later on is I'm going to have to make amends to those. I'm going to have to ask people to forgive me for what I've done to them. By the same token, I'm going to have to start forgiving people for what they've done to me. And the forgiving process can start right here in this column too, when I begin to get names out of the way and concentrate on what they did, not who they are. Very valuable information. Let's look at the third instruction.
In most cases, it's found that our self-esteem, here's these words we talked about earlier in what part of self was affected. In most cases, it's found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened, so we were sore, we were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal sex relations which had been interfered with? We were usually as definite as this example. And again, not having any working knowledge of the basic instincts of life, I just couldn't do the third column. But after going to the 12 and 12 and looking up some of these words, finding out about the basic instincts of life, then I have a working knowledge of these words, and then I can put them down on the third column. Very, very simple.
The only way that I can get upset with you or with an institution is if you threaten my basic instincts of life in some way. If you threaten my social instinct, it upsets me. If you threaten my security instinct in any way, it upsets me. If you threaten my sex life in any way, it upsets me. So if I'm upset with you, at least one of those basic instincts is going to be affected. In many cases, all three of them. But at least one if I'm upset with you. And I think as you fill out the third column, you're going to see a certain pattern start developing. You're going to see that you continually are writing down self-esteem, 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 self-esteem. And it begins to become clear that self-esteem is a real problem with you. Another person might be writing down security, 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 security. And they can see that security is a real problem with them. Another person, it might be sex, 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 and sex. And they can see that sex is a real problem. It's going to be a combination of all three, but at least one of those basic instincts is going to stand out for every individual that fills out this third column. And we can begin to see the part of self that we really got a problem with. In filling out the third column, I learned another piece of information which has turned out to be one of the most valuable things I ever learned. For the first time as I filled out the third column, I began to see where anger comes from. I've always had a problem with anger. And I've always acted and reacted in anger and hurt other people. And I'd be ashamed of it and I'd say, I'll not do that again and I'll turn right around and get angry and do it all over again. You can't do anything about a problem till you understand the problem. And I never knew where anger came from. I thought it was just one of those feelings that flitted into your mind. You could do nothing about it. But today I realize it comes from a threat to one of these basic instincts of life. That's what causes me to get angry. And it depends upon my reaction to that threat that determines whether I'm going to be angry or not. You know, if my relationship with God is right, if my instincts are under control at the level God intends, you can say and do about anything you want to me, and it's not going to bother me at all. But if my instincts are not under control, and my relationship with God's not right about anything you say or do to me creates anger. I'll give you a good example. I'm married to a real black belt Al-Anon, 38 years in the Al-Anon program. She got a Al-Anon belt buckle about that big around. You know? Great program. I love her deeply. I love her deeply. But Al-Anons get sick in self once in a while too. Now I know that they don't like to admit they do, but they do. And once in a while she'll be a little sick in self. And she'll say or do something to me that threatens one of my basic instincts of life. And when she does, it hurts. And I found that when that happens, one or two things are going to take place. If my instincts are under control, my relationship with God's right, I'm able to say, well, the poor old thing, they're sick just like we are. And they can't help it any more than we can. And it'll just slide off of my back. And the rest of the day is okay. Now, 30 days from now, the same lady does the same thing. Only this time my relationship with God's not quite right. My instincts are not necessarily under control. And I react with anger. And I romp and I stomp and I raise hell with Barbara and everybody around me all day long. The same lady did the same thing, but I choose to react to it in an entirely different manner based upon my relationship with God and whether my instincts are under control. Thank God I've learned that. Because you see, I can't do anything about Barbara. I can't do anything about any other human being on earth. But with God's help, I can do something about my reaction to it. And if I don't have to get angry, then I'm in much less chance of getting drunk. Remember, resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. I see more people get drunk in AA over anger than I do anything else. Thank God I've learned how to handle some of that stuff. Now, we filled out these three columns. We've learned three things. Number one, column one, how resentful we really are. We made a decision, let God direct our thinking. He can't because of the resentments. Column two, it's not them I resent, it's what they've done to me. Column three, it's not even what they've done to me. It's how I have chosen to react to it based on my own basic instincts of life. Very valuable information. You want to put...
If you want to realize and look at this in this manner, that this inventory is just little notes to yourself to talk about them in step five. That's all. Very, very, very simple. Just little notes to yourself.
Okay, we're going to put a couple names up here, just an example. We're going to run for about maybe 10 more minutes, and then we'll quit for the day. Wish we had more time, but we don't. They're going to have a big dinner in here this evening. They're going to have to get this thing ready. Wish they had a dinner for us, but they're not. We're going to take a couple names from our inventories and put them on here, just a couple of them. The first name on my resentment sheet was this lady named Barbara. You know, some 36, 37, 38 years ago, I hated this woman with a purple passion. If there was any way I could have killed her and got by with it, I believe I would have done it. You know, I used to lay awake at night and fantasize. Now, tomorrow morning on her way to work, and I always believed in her being self-supporting through her own contributions, and I'd think, now, tomorrow morning on the way to work, she's going to get run over by a big semi-truck. And it's not going to be just any semi-truck. It's going to be a very affluent trucking company. And they're going to kill her, and then I'm going to sue them. And I'm going to get rid of her and get a couple million dollars out of this deal at the same time. You Al-Anons are not the only ones that fantasize. We alcoholics did it too. Second name on my sheet was the Internal Revenue Service. Now, if you wanted to hear a guy come unglued, you just mention their name in my presence. And I immediately begin to jump up and down, frothing at the mouth, and just threw an absolute fit. God, I hated those people. Joe, who was the first one on your sheet?
Name was Rose.
Name was Rose. Now, who was Rose? Wife number one? Okay. Old Rose, wife number one, was Joe's first one. Okay, that's how easy it is now to fill out that first column. You don't have to be highly educated to do that. And if you can't write, you feed the names to somebody else and have them write them down. You know, very simple. Column two. Why am I so upset with Barbara? Well, this lady had the audacity to file for divorce three times the last year before she went to Al-Anon. She's spending more money on lawyers than I'm spending on booze and everything that goes with it. And I really had it in for her. Other reasons, too, but that was the main one. Why am I so upset with the Internal Revenue Service? Well, they're trying to put me in jail, that's why. Joe, how come you so upset with Rose? Had an affair with another man. That's how simple column two is. Column three. Which part of self is affected? Barbara filing for divorce three times within 1 year. Is that a threat to my self-esteem? Oh, yeah. What are the neighbors going to think about me now? This woman filed for divorce three times and I'm still letting her live in the same house I'm living in. What are they going to think about me now? Threat to my personal relationships? Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's going to take the kids, and I probably won't get to see them anymore. Is it a threat to my security? Oh, yeah. By the time she and the lawyers get through with it, they'll have it all. What little bit we got left. Is it a threat to my sex life? She probably won't let me have any after we get a divorce. Yeah. I had a hard enough time getting her to give me some before we got married. I don't think she will after we get a divorce. Just wipe me out right across the board. Internal Revenue Service trying to put me in jail. Is that a threat to my self-esteem? You bet you. What'll people think about me now? Threat to my personal relationships? Oh, yeah, I'm going to be locked up. Can't have any relationship with my wife and my kids. Threat to my security? Oh, yeah, by the time they're through with their fines and everything, they'll have it all. Threat to my sex life? The kind I'd like to have, yeah, they're me. There may be some in there I don't want. But Rose having an affair with another man. Is that a threat to Joe's self-esteem?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. One of the neighbors, he's not even man enough to keep his own wife at home. Threat to his personal relationships? I never look to see what he's put up there. I'm always afraid to. Is it a threat to his security? Sure it is. He's going to have to go to work now. That woman's been supporting him for the last 10 years. He got to get a job now. Threat to his sex life? Why, sure it is. Just wipes him out right across the board. That's how simple this thing is now. You know, it's just not difficult to do that. Okay, let's go back now to the bottom of page 65. Joe, you want anything you want on there? Oh, let's forget that last name. He can't put too much up there. I've just known him for 30 years. If he starts snitching on me, I'll snitch on him, too. Bottom of page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. Well, the first thing apparent was this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us have ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and then we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived.
Now, it's plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit this, that we squander the hours which might have been worthwhile.
And I read that last statement, and I tried to look back in my life to see how much time I've squandered in resentments. Now, I don't know about you guys, But when I've got a good resentment churning around in my head, I'm pretty well paralyzed from doing anything worthwhile. And one of my favorite things I used to do when I was drinking was get up in the morning, have a drink of whiskey and a cup of coffee, and turn on my resentment replay machine and replay what she did to me yesterday, what he did to me last week, what that damn neighbor said to me 90 days ago, what that damn policeman did to me a year ago, what that damn boss did to me 5 years ago, and what this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy. And I loved every moment of it. It took me just about an hour to run through that tape. And when I get through that tape, I'd have another drink of whiskey and another cup of coffee, and then I would turn on my get-even machine. By God, the next time she does that, I'll do this and she'll do that, and I'll say this and wacko. I'm going to put it on her. They're not going to treat me that way. Loved every moment of it. Took at least an hour to run through the get-even tape. I have spent literally thousands and thousands and thousands of hours in resentments. And as I look at them, I can't see where they ever did me any good whatsoever. Never made me any money. Never made me feel better, just made me feel worse. Never straightened up a relationship with another human being. It just made them worse and worse and worse and worse. And as far as I can tell, it was absolute wasted time. Now, I've reached a point in my life where I don't have a hell of a lot of time left. And I love to be sober and peaceful and happy and free. I enjoy every moment of my life. And what little time I've got left, I do not intend to waste any more of it in resentments, because they absolutely block me off from God, from myself, and from my fellow human being. And they make me sick, and I don't want to be sick anymore. So I don't have to do that anymore. I found a way not to have to do that anymore. The wasting of the time is a bad thing, but that's not the worst thing. Here's the worst thing about a resentment.
But with the alcoholics, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shed ourselves off in the sunlight of the Spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns when we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die.
There's the worst thing wrong with a resentment. We're harboring a resentment in our head. We're blocked off from God. And blocked off from God, we don't feel good. And we're going to feel bad just so long. And we're going to start thinking about taking a drink in order to feel better. Next thing you know, we become insane. And we end up drunk all over again. And for us, to drink is to die. That's the worst thing about resentments. I see more people get drunk over resentments and anger than anything else in AA. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. Always before, I looked at it to see what those suckers had done to me. Today, I look at it to see what the resentment is going to do to me. And if it's going to get me drunk, then I'm looking at it from an entirely different angle. We begin to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing as others fancied or real had power to actually kill. And I read that and I said, Charlie, how stupid can you be? All my life, I've been proud of the fact that I stand on my own 2 feet. Nobody tells me what to do. I don't need your advice, thank you. And I suddenly realized that other people have controlled and dominated my thinking as far back as I can remember through my resentments toward them. And if they control and dominate my thinking, they control and dominate my actions, they control and dominate my life, and I've given them the power to actually kill me. And then I said, man, you really are stupid. because some of these people have been dead and buried in the graveyard for years. And reaching out from the grave and had me but a yang-yang as far back as I can remember. And when I saw that, I said, to hell with those people. I'm not going to let those people live in my head rent-free any longer. I made a decision to let God direct my thinking. And if they direct my thinking, alive or dead, God can't, and it's just that simple. And you know, an amazing thing happened to me. You know, we alcoholics fancy ourselves as reasonably intelligent people. And I think we are. I don't think we're smarter than others, but we're reasonably intelligent people. And we don't like to look stupid. And we see the stupidity of letting other people control us and dominate us through our resentments toward them. That looks so stupid that about 95% of those resentments are going to automatically start disappearing because they look so dumb. Oh, they look good in your head. But you get them down on paper and you see what they're doing to you. They look double dumb on paper. And about 95% of my resentments begin to disappear. Now, we're going to have to quit. We're going to have 3 or 4 or 5 resentments that don't disappear because they look so dumb. And tomorrow morning we'll talk about how to get rid of them. And then we're going to talk about how to really see the truth behind those resentments and where they actually do come from. I think it'll be very revealing to you tomorrow morning. That's all we got for today. Okay. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Keith. My name is Joe, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's truly by God's grace and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous I find in a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sober today, and for that I'm very, very thankful. And so for a lot of other people.
Especially Phyllis.
Especially my wife, Phyllis. And I've been sober since November 3rd, 1973, and for that I'm truly thankful. I'd like to read the preamble, please. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. And it's been a great weekend so far. You guys have really made it that way, and we thank you for that. I want to tell you a little story this morning. It goes along with what we're doing right now, the inventory. And it's a story about these three boys, about like Keith and Charlie and I. They were about 22, 23 years old, and they were in the sixth grade. You have to kind of get the picture here. And the principal wanted them out of the sixth grade desperately. So he called them in the office one day and said, boys, I'm going to ask you all a question. If you get to answer these questions correct, you can move on to the seventh grade. So they asked Keith, said, Keith, what is it that women have two of that men like to get their hands on? And he thought for a long time, and finally he said, well, women have two hands, men like to hold women's hands. He said, that's good, Keith, you're in the seventh grade. He looked at Charlie and said, now, Charlie, what is it that men have one of that women like to get their hands on? And he thought for a long time, and finally he said, well, men have one billfold. Women like to get their hands on a man's billfold. He said, that's good, Charlie. You can go to the seventh grade. He looked at me and he said, now, Joe, I'm going to ask you a simple question. I said, God, I hope so. I missed those first two. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind, isn't it?
Are you through?
I'm finished.
All right. Good morning, everybody. My name is Charlie Furman. I'm a very grateful recovering alcoholic. Because I'm a member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and by the grace of the power that I found through the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink for 13,136 days today, one day at a time. And this, I'm very, very grateful. You, You guys really look good this morning. You really do. Not a resentment left in the whole bunch. You really worked on it. How many of you went back where you were staying last night and worked on at least one resentment? Could I see your hands? Yeah, a lot of you did. Great. How many of you got rid of at least one resentment? Could I see your hand? Yeah. How many of you did we give a new resentment to yesterday afternoon?
Pray for us. We need to pray and you need to practice.
We always like to start Sunday morning off with a little spiritual story. And I've got one that I just love to share with other people. And this was about a new young priest. And he was so nervous during his first Mass, he could barely speak. And before his second week in the pulpit, he asked the Monsignor what he could do to relax himself. And the Monsignor said it might help if you would put some vodka in the water glass, and after a few sips, everything would be fine. Well, the next Sunday, the new young priest put the suggestion into practice, and he was able to talk up a storm, and he felt great. Upon returning to the rectory, he found a note from the Monsignor which said, "I suggest the following. Number one, next time, sip at the water rather than gulp at it. Number two, there are 10 commandments, not 12. Number three, there are 12 disciples, not 10. Number four, David slew Goliath. He didn't kick the shit out of him. Number five, we do not refer to our Savior Jesus Christ and his apostles as J.C. and the boys. Number six, next week there's a taffy pulling contest at St. Peter's, not a Peter pulling contest at St. Taffy's. Number seven, we do not refer to the cross as the big T. And number eight, last but not least, the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost are not referred to as Big Daddy, Junior, and the Spook." That's probably about as spiritual as we'll get this morning, too. Okay, we finished up yesterday evening. We were in the process of talking about our inventory process. Joe, let's put it on the screen for just a moment, or we might get that fellow right there just to turn that switch on for us. Would you do that? That little red switch up there on the front of it. Yeah. Yeah, okay, great. Thank you, thank you. And we made our list of resentments, and we found out how many resentments we really did have. Most of us didn't think we had very many, and we start putting them all down on paper for the first time. We realize how many resentments we really do have. And if we've got that many resentments, then God can't direct our thinking because the resentments direct our thinking. Column two, we put down the cause of the resentment. And as we filled out that second column, we begin to realize it's not really them we're mad at. It's what they've done that's got us upset, and begins to get kind of names out of the picture. And we start centering in on what they did to us rather than who they are. Column three, we put down the part of self that was affected. And we found that in most cases, we'd be one part of self is really going to stand out as we fill out that third column. One person may be writing in self-esteem all the time. Another one may be security. Another one, it may be sex. With most of us, it'll be a combination of all three. But at least one part of self's going to stand out and show us the part of self we're having a real problem with. Column three, we also found out the source of our anger. We found that we cannot get upset unless somebody threatens one of the basic instincts of life. And if they threaten our social instinct, security instinct, or sex instinct in any way, then we usually react with anger and resentment, etc. And we never could do anything about anger because we didn't know where it came from. But now that we know it comes from a threat to one of the basic instincts of life, then with God's help, maybe we don't have to react with anger all the time. And we're in much less chance of getting drunk than we were before we started this thing. We also found in the book that the resentments are an absolute waste of time, because when they're churning around in our head, we're pretty well paralyzed from doing anything worthwhile. All we want to do is just sit there and turn that resentment over and over and over and over, replaying what they did to us and replaying how we're going to get even with them and how we're going to show them and et cetera. And for most of us, we've wasted thousands and thousands of hours in resentments and really can't see whether they did us any good at all. So that was a bad thing, the absolute waste of time. But we also found that wasn't the worst thing. The worst thing is that a resentment blocks us off from the sunlight of the Spirit. And blocked off from God, we don't feel good. And if we don't feel good, then sooner or later we start thinking about taking a drink. Next thing you know, we become insane. And we take a drink and we trigger the allergy and we end up drunk over and over and over again. Resentments are the number one offender. We turn back to that list because it held the key to the future. And for the first time, we begin to realize that other people have really controlled and dominated our thinking for us as far back as we can remember. And we always thought that we had it, that nobody told us what to do, and we didn't need anybody's advice. But we begin to realize that other people, through our resentments toward them, have actually controlled and dominated our thinking for years and years and years. With that came the realization that some of these people are already dead and buried in the graveyard. And reaching out from the grave and had us by the yang-yang as far back as we can remember. And we saw that began to look pretty stupid, pretty stupid. And we fancy ourselves as reasonably intelligent people. We don't like to look stupid. And we see the stupidity behind these resentments. We see that it's letting other people control us and dominate our lives for us, it begins to look so dumb that those resentments that did look awful good in our head now begin to look pretty stupid on paper. And we don't like to look dumb, we don't like to look stupid. So about 95% of those resentments automatically begin to disappear when we see the stupidity behind them. But there are also going to be probably 3 or 4 or 5 resentments that have been embedded in our minds so long and so deeply that just seeing the stupidity behind them don't get rid of them. And the book recognizes now in every action step that self cannot overcome self, that in every action step we're going to have God's help. So we now come to the first prayer in the big book on step 4. We hear always about the step 3 prayers, the step 7 prayers. We never hear about the step 4 prayers. So let's look and see how we can get rid of those that are so deeply embedded that they don't automatically leave when we see their stupidity behind them. Joe?
He said this was our course. We realized that the people who had wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick.
We're at the bottom of page 66.
And though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. Here's the first part of the prayer. We ask God to help us to show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." See, I used to lay awake nights like most people thinking about these people and how I was going to get even with them and how I could get even with them. Never could get even with them. But I finally found out how you get even with people. The way you get even with people is you pray for them. You see? And when you pray for them, then you're even. And I did that. But I had some deep-seated resentments, too, that didn't quite work like this. And I was in Apache, Oklahoma one time. I was sober about 4 or 5 months. And I met this lady named Alabama Carruthers. Some of you all may have heard of Alabama. She's dead now, bless her heart. But she loved Alcoholics Anonymous, and she loved this program dearly. And she was speaking there that night. And she said a couple of things that kind of went off like a thunderbolt in my head. One of them said she had a soul sickness. And boy, soul sickness. Now, that's what I finally heard a word I could put with the feeling that I had in the last days of my drinking, a soul sickness. And then she said another thing. She said, "I've got peace of mind tonight." Peace of mind. God, I thought to myself, how long has it been since I've had peace of mind? Could not remember. And after the meeting was over with, we were sitting around this hotel, and My little friend George is laid over in her lap asleep. He'd sleep in your lap, too, if he got a chance. But that's George. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, I said, Alabama, you said you had peace of mind tonight. How did you get peace of mind? And she said, well, Joe, tell me what's going on in your mind. See, I never told anybody that. Because I think they would think I was crazy if they knew what was going on in my mind. And I told them about my old Rose there. And when I drank, back in those days, I drank and I go places. And I didn't come home right away either. Sometimes I'd be gone overnight or 2 or 3 days or a week or a month or whatever. And I'd come home just like I just went out to the store to get a loaf of bread. You know, thought no more of it than that. But this one time I'd been gone about 3 months. And I was sitting at the bar one night called the Zebra Lounge. It's a lovely place. And
still smell it today.
Almost smell it now. But I was sitting on the bar stool and I got to thinking. Now, you know, either drink or think, but don't get the two of them mixed up. I got to thinking, well, old Rose hadn't seen me in about 3 months. I bet she's lonely. Wouldn't you be if you hadn't seen me in about 3 months? And I said, I think I'll go home and visit. Anybody know what I mean by visit? Okay. So I'm going to go home and visit. So I went over to my house and I banged on the door. And she kind of peeked out the door a little bit. And I just broke right in there is what I did. And got in my living room. And there's still an old boy in my recliner. Watching my TV. In my house. With my wife. And I'm making payments on all that. But what are you going to do, Jim? I did. I jumped on that old boy, and he liked to beat me to death in my own living room floor. Put me out in the yard and told me not to ever come back. Boy, you think I didn't live on that one for a long time. And I told Alabama about that. I told her how my mind used to race all the time thinking about that situation. How can we get even with those people? And she said, well, Joe, you're just full of resentments. And I said, well, what is a resentment? She said, resentments are old angers and old hurts that are refelt over and over and over again. And all that anger you intend to use on them, you're turning it on yourself. You're making yourself sick and blaming it on them. And she had to explain that to me several times before I finally got it. And I said, well, is there any solution for this? What can I do about this? Now, you have to know Alabama. She had a purse about that big and about that tall. And she began to dig down in that purse. You know how they are. And she was looking for something. She finally found this book down there. And she pulled it out. And she said, Joe, on page 551 of this book, in the Freedom from Bondage section, is a story of a lady who had some deep-seated resentments like you do. If you read and do what she said and did, maybe it would help you. She said it had helped her, maybe it would help me. So she showed me on page 551 in the third paragraph. This lady said, I've had many spiritual experiences since I've been in the program. Many that I didn't recognize right away, for I'm slow to learn. They take many guises. But one was so outstanding that I like to pass it on whenever I can in the hope it would help someone else as it helped me. As I said earlier, self-pity, resentment were my constant companions. And my inventory began to look like a 33-year diary. For I seemed to have a resentment against everybody I'd ever known. All but one responded to the treatment suggested in the steps immediately, but this one posed a problem. And it was against my mother, and was 25 years old. I had fed it, fanned it, and nurtured it as one might a delicate child. And it had become as much a part of me as my breathing. It had provided me with my excuses for my lack of education, my marital failures, personal failures, inadequacies, and, of course, my alcoholism. And though I really thought I'd been willing to part with it now, I knew I was reluctant to let it go. If it did all that thing for me, I'd be reluctant to let it go, too. But one morning, however, I realized I had to get rid of it before my reprieve was running out. And if I didn't get rid of it, I was going to get drunk, and I didn't want to get drunk anymore. In my prayers that morning, I asked God to point out to me some way to be free of this resentment. During the day, a friend of mine brought me some magazines to take to a hospital group I was interested in. And I looked through them, and a banner across the front of one featured an article by a prominent clergyman in which I caught the word resentment. Now, he said, in effect, and here it is, If you have a resentment you want to be free of, if you will pray for the person or thing that you resent, you will be free. If you will ask in prayer for everything you want for yourself to be given to them, you will be free. Ask for their health, their prosperity, their happiness, and you will be free. Even when you really don't want it for them and your prayers are only words and you don't mean it, go ahead and do it anyway. Do it every day for 2 weeks, and you'll find you've come to mean it and want it for them. And you'll realize that where you used to feel bitterness and resentment and hatred, you now feel compassion, understanding, and love. Well, I went home after that conference and got in bed that night. My mind started racing again. And I remembered, I said, I think I'll pray for those people. And I prayed for them, added some names to the list. Next morning, I got up and I said, I think I'll pray for those people. And I prayed for them and some other people. And as the days went by, it seemed like I was in constant prayer for weeks, 2 or 3 weeks or four, I don't know how long, all day long. But I do know this, one morning at the corner of 31st and Lewis in Tulsa, Oklahoma, after one of our cold winters, and I guess it was in early April, I got stuck in a stoplight. And I looked over there at this beautiful home sitting on the corner. Now, this was just the length of a stoplight. I noticed those tulips were red and yellow, full bloom. They were just gorgeous. The grass was green and the birds were singing and the trees were blooming out. And so, boy, I said to myself, it's a beautiful morning, isn't it? Absolutely a beautiful morning. And then I said to myself, well, Joe, how long has it been since you've seen a morning like this? I could not remember. I could not remember. See, I've been looking in black and white for so long. There was no color in my life. But that morning, everything was vivid. And I knew that morning was the morning that this program would work for me. You see, I prayed for those people. They didn't change. But I did. And my feelings toward them did. And then I realized I wasn't laying awake nights thinking about them either. You see, we were even. I was even with them because I prayed for them. And this book talks about being cut off from the sunlight of the Spirit. I know what that means. I mean, I really do know what that means. And I don't ever want to go back there again, ever. Thank God for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous.
If you've got a resentment that you don't want to get rid of, for God's sake, don't pray about it. Because if you do, it's probably going to disappear. You know, I had one of those against a guy, and another one of those that I would gladly have killed him if I could get by with it. I got to that part of the recovery program, and I told my sponsor, I said, I can't get rid of this resentment. And he said, why? And I explained it to him, and he said, oh, Charlie, said, you've got to get rid of that resentment, that if you don't, sooner or later, it's going to get you drunk. And in my usual smart mouth manner, I said, okay, how in the hell do I do that? And he took me to this page in the book that Joe just read. And he said, now go home and do what it says. And you'll be okay. You'll get rid of that thing. And I went home and got down on my knees, which again I very seldom did in those days. And I said, God, I want you to give that son of a bitch everything he deserves. And that's the only prayer I had for him that day. And the next day I prayed again, and the next day I prayed again, and 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 days later, I don't know how long, I found myself saying something I didn't intend to say. I found myself saying, God, give in him in his life what I want in my own. Give him the same peace of mind and serenity and happiness that I seek for myself. And 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 8 days later, I don't know when, one morning I woke up and that resentment was gone. Never, never to return. And the irony in the whole situation is it wasn't 2 months and this guy moved in as my next door neighbor. And we were allowed to visit back and forth again in each other's homes, and eventually we became good friends again. This thing really does work. I think the reason it works so good is prayer for the welfare, for the benefit of another human being, is one of the great expressions of love that one human being can have for another. And love and hate can't exist on the same plane. One's going to have to replace the other. And as we pray for their prosperity and their welfare, Do it every day for 2 weeks. And if it don't work, do it 2 more weeks. And if that don't work, do it 2 more weeks. And eventually, those kind of resentments are going to disappear also. Now just think, if 95% of the resentments disappear because they look so stupid, if the other 5% can be removed through prayer, then that means this display cases up here in my little store that were filled with resentments have now been emptied out. They've now been emptied out. The damaged and unsaleable goods called resentments are gone. And when that happens, there's another natural law that applies. And that law is that nature abhors a vacuum. No such thing as a vacuum or a void. There's always something rushing in to fill it up. If those resentments disappear, God's not going to leave another hole in my head. I've got enough of those already. If they disappear, they're going to have to be replaced with something else. And the only thing that can possibly replace them will be the opposite of the resentment. And where my mind used to be filled with resentments, now then that part of it is filled with love, patience, tolerance, compassion, and goodwill toward my fellow man. You know, that's God's thinking. And I found out to my amazement that to get love, patience, tolerance, compassion, and goodwill, I didn't have to go to any other fellowships, and I didn't have to read any other books. If God dwells within me and my book says that he does, then those things have always been a part of my makeup. I just never could use them before. In my chase for money, power, prestige, sex, all what I thought were the good things of life, the love, patience, tolerance, compassion, and goodwill had to be repressed to let me operate on the level I wanted to operate on. But now that the resentments are gone, they automatically come to the surface. The most amazing thing that I've ever seen actually takes place. A third of my mind now, I'm in much less chance of drinking. We don't have to wait till we get to the end of this thing to get something out of it. If resentments have been replaced by love, patience, tolerance, compassion, and goodwill, then I'm beginning to get a little peace of mind, a little serenity, and a little happiness all at the same time. You know, this thing really does work. It always amazes me when it does. Now, it would do no good, though, for me to get rid of those resentments if I didn't know how to keep them from coming back. Because the world's full of sick people. And they're going to do it to me again tomorrow. And if I'm not careful, I'll resent. And I can't have just one resentment. If I get one, if I don't do something about it, the next thing you know, I've got two. And then I've got four, and then I've got eight, and then I've got 16, and I'm a basket case all over again. So we need to do one more thing. Let's go to page 67. And now let's look at the last two columns on that inventory sheet. On page 67, the middle paragraph down the middle of the page, it says, referring to our list again. You see, this is why you've got to have a written inventory. This is the second time we've had to go back and refer to that list again. If you had a mental inventory, you would have lost it already. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. We've always looked to see what those suckers did to us. We've never looked to see about our own mistakes. Or had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly, and were willing to set these matters straight. So I go back to the inventory sheet, and I look at column 4. And if you'll notice, column 4 is headed up, what did I do? Putting out of mind the wrongs others had done, I resolutely looked for my own mistakes. What did I do, if anything, to set in motion trains of circumstances which in turn cause people or institutions to hurt me, and eventually led to my resentment of them for doing so. So I went to that first name on my sheet, that lady named Barbara. And I said, okay, Charlie, now let's do what your book's telling you to do. You forget what Barbara did. You forget about her filing for divorce 3 times in that 1 year. What did you do, if anything, to set this thing in motion? And it took me about 5 seconds. And I said, if I hadn't been out there screwing around, I wouldn't have got caught. Joe calls that committing adultery. I just call it screwing around. I wouldn't have got caught, and she probably wouldn't have filed for divorce in the first place. Another 5 seconds. If I hadn't been sneaking around behind her back lying to her all the time, she probably wouldn't have filed for divorce in the first place. Another 5 seconds. If I hadn't been blowing all of our money on what I thought was important, paying no attention to what my wife and kids actually needed, she might not file for divorce in the first place. And for the first time, I began to realize why I loved resentments. You see, I can play a resentment over and over and over and over in my head. And every time I play it over and over in my head, I distort the picture just a little bit every time. And every time I distort the picture, I made what she did a little worse and what I did a little bit less. And let me play it over long enough, I'm finally able to transfer all blame to Barbara and make myself just as pure as the driven snow. You know, I don't think we alcoholics could live with ourselves when we're out there doing our thing if we didn't have the ability to transfer blame to others. The guilt and remorse eats us up bad enough. But if we had to actually see the truth behind the things that we're doing when we're out there drinking, you know, I don't think we could possibly stand it. So with these resentments, we can play them over and over and over and gradually transfer blame to others and never have to look at ourselves and go on and live the kind of life we're wanting to live. I said, my God, is there any more like this on here? I looked at the Internal Revenue Service. Hated those people with a purple passion. I said, now forget the fact they're trying to put you in jail. What did you do, if anything, to set this thing in motion? Very simple. If I hadn't cheated on my income tax, they wouldn't have been trying to put me in jail. And rather than admit that I'm a liar and a thief and a cheat, I play that resentment over and over and over in my head, transfer all blame to them, make myself as pure as the driven snow. Joe with old Rose. Same kind of thing. Joe, what did you do, if anything, to set that little deal in motion? Committing adultery, he said. Did you do any lying to her? Yeah, lots of lying to her. Did you hear what he said? Always spending their money trying to impress people he didn't like in the first place, you know. Typical alcoholic. And what we do with those resentments, we play them over and over and over in our head, gradually transfer blame to others, make ourselves as pure as the driven snow, and then keep right on living the same kind of life we wanted to live. And we men go from woman to woman to woman. You ladies go from man to man to man. We go from job to job to job. We go from city to city to city and state to state to state, and it's always their damn fault. I think that fourth column is one of the most revealing things that any of us can do for ourselves, to look to see the part that we played in this thing. If we didn't play any part in it, if they did it to us and we didn't do anything to set it in motion in column 4, we just put nothing. But in most cases, in my case, everyone, I didn't have a resentment that I had not done something to set that thing in motion. created a problem for them, then they retaliated against me. And then...